I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. Today, I've got a really cool guy to talk about a very, very important key area of our business. And that man is Johnny Steele. He is the VP of Marketing for Payoneer. And Payoneer is, in corporate speak, leading B2B cross-border payments platform. So what that means is they connect businesses all over the world who need to pay or get paid in simple terms. So they are also, it's worth mentioning, Amazon's, as Amazon calls it, trusted payments platform for cross-border sellers. So Amazon has basically given them the green light to be their number one go-to place for this sort of stuff. So they are the, you know, kind of new kids on the block, and yet they're kind of really established as well. So really cool people. Johnny, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Michael. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Great. So, Johnny, just start off. Let's tell us, I know you're from a, you know, obviously a company, but tell us about yourself a little bit, your sort of personal background.
Yeah, so I'm a Londoner born and bred. I grew up in North London and lived the first 25 years of my life there. After I studied actually at university in London, studied law, and then decided about 2.5 years into it that I definitely didn't want to become a lawyer. Saw far more interest in other places. I then went on to do a master's degree in war studies, which I think war studies is probably a good training for anybody going into the world of online and e-commerce to be ready to go out and fight for your brand and fight for your company. And since then, I've worked for a series of different tech companies and a variety of business development and marketing roles for the last 15 years or so. And most recently, been at Payoneer for the last 3 years. But my first experience in the world of online and e-commerce was going back around about 15 years ago when I was fairly fresh out of university. I worked at the very beginning for a company called mysupermarket.com. So it's still a strong company in the UK and a few other markets around the world that does comparison of grocery products and prices. So you can do your online grocery shopping from any of the supermarkets, see which one has the best prices, and send your order to that supermarket. So that was my kind of first entry in the days, you know, before Wikipedia and Facebook and a lot of the things that we all take for granted today and part of online marketing, but that was the beginnings for me of starting to build up a brand as an e-commerce brand, and that's, you know, led through a variety of different positions until I've entered the world of fintech and now here serving businesses all over the world who do business cross borders.
Wow, and that's quite an exciting background. So the first thing I must just double check is, what is fintech in English?
Fintech, great. I'm glad you caught me out on that one. So fintech is short for financial technology. So one of the fastest growing areas in the tech world today is in startups and now more developed companies. Payoneer has actually been around for 12 years. So we've been around even longer than that. That word fintech has been around. But that word fintech is this whole kind of generation of new technologies that are coming online that are helping people to run their business, run their finances on tech platforms rather than perhaps the older establishments that we were used to in the past.
Excellent. Thank you. For a couple of things to pick up on. First of all, thanks for explaining about Payoneer's history. So the reason I said they're the new kids on the block in a way is because Payoneer's obviously is even longer established than I thought. And it's a very, very big global player in this area of, you know, of payments in and out, but you know, to put it in simple terms, but the fintech on a more technological basis. But also I know because I came to the launch party recently that they just launched in the UK. So there's that sort of almost startup energy that I found around you guys. So I think I'm really delighted that in the UK we've got some guys who understand what it feels like to be a startup, put it that way, because it is a very different thing from a very established corporate way of life, right?
I think it's a great point about this startup characteristics of the company. I'm very glad that your first impressions of meeting our new UK team was that it felt startup-y. And it's something that we as a business, even 12 years in, try and make sure, and we're approaching 1,000 employees worldwide with our headquarters in New York City and offices across the globe from Palo Alto to Tokyo. And we are still trying to make sure that however big we get, we don't get corporate. We still act like a startup. We are very close to understanding what our customers are needing and asking and the pains they're feeling, and still have that agility to be able to make decisions that are going to deliver the right product for the right customer at the right time, and you know, definitely avoid becoming a company that looks like it's lost that startup magic.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, startups have a lot of bad things to to them when you're inside them, which is like, you know, working long hours, generally financial instability, having a bit of a mess. And I'm not sure you guys are guilty of any of those things, which I certainly have had in my business, but like many Amazon sellers. But yeah, I think responsiveness is one of the words that comes to mind. So let's plunge in a little bit further. So you are somebody I know from experience from hearing you speak in the past about the global overview, and particularly where the topic brand Britain sits. And that's something that I've always been a little bit dismissive of. Maybe it's a very British thing. As you know, you're a Londoner born and bred, to be a little bit dismissive of Britain, and never mind Londoners like to moan about living in London all the time, right? It's a tradition. So you really opened my eyes again to the power of that. So let's talk a little bit about sort of very big picture brands. So I want to talk about brand Britain, and then maybe the other two big brands, which is Made in Germany and Made in the USA, which are also very, very relevant for Amazon sellers.
Absolutely, and that's exactly where we focus with our work with Amazon sellers. I mean, we serve businesses all over the world that have all sorts of different needs, whether selling services or renting out their apartments or anything like that. But for the e-commerce vertical, we are there to be able to connect an Amazon seller to more opportunities in other countries. So for the British Amazon seller that might have been building up a very successful business selling on Amazon.co.uk, what we're keen to do is to be able to introduce them or help bridge the gap in selling on Amazon.com, selling to US consumers, or selling in the EU to French, Spanish, Italian, or German consumers as well. And it also goes beyond even Amazon, is looking to other parts of the world where perhaps Amazon isn't number one, and being able to connect those same sellers with the same one platform to opportunities in those markets as well. So a good example would be going into Southeast Asia, where you've got Lazada as a strong brand. You can go into Latin America, where Linio is a strong brand. In France, there's Cdiscount, which is right up there with Amazon, and being able to connect that same seller to more opportunities. And I think when you touch on this concept of brand Britain, this is something quite unique that the UK seller has. And sometimes, as you quite rightly pointed out, we're a little bit blasé about it. We just kind of assume that everything is rubbish and miserable and the skies are grey and there's nothing to be proud of. And in actual fact, when you actually step out of the country, and I have the pleasure of spending more than half my time in other parts of the world and going around and introducing myself to other businesses and speaking at other conferences, you really get a sense that there's quite a lot of respect that is given towards Britain, towards British brands, but towards British manufacturing. And as much as British manufacturing might have been on the decline over the last even decades, there is still an opportunity for sellers of merchandise, whether you actually manufacture the merchandise in the UK or not, but to still play up your brand Britain credentials. And I can share one or two examples of it. There's one that I love on a personal level, which is a brand called Orchard Toys. They are a brand that make games and toys for children. I have two boys of my own who are age 9 and 6. They love playing games whenever I can get them off the iPad and off the PlayStation. This brand sells extremely well in the US on Amazon.com. And if you look at the packaging of any one of their items, you see a large Union Jack in the corner of the boxes. The packaging is beautiful, the colors are beautiful, the illustrations are beautiful, but you have a large Union Jack there, made in Britain, or British brand, I can't remember the exact language. And it has an association when that US consumer is just going through the virtual shelves on Amazon.com and trying to pick out a nice gift for their kids or for their grandkids or for their friends' kids, there is something associated with, wow, it's a British brand. There's something there that maybe is a little more intelligent or more advanced, or it must be well made. And this is something that, again, we might not necessarily believe that or think that's necessarily the case, but there's definitely a perception from other countries of value associated with merchandise that's made in other markets, such as the UK.
Brilliant. Now, there's many, many good points that I want to pick up on there, that just to sort of, you know, bring it back to Amazon sellers or drill it home, really. The first is the importance of trying to sell into other markets than just the UK. And it amazes me, as somebody who started off selling on Amazon.com in America, despite being based in Britain, how few people or how many people actually make, you know, pretty decent living on Amazon.co.uk or even in Europe, but haven't yet explored the US. And partly, I think the barrier is perception of difficulties like, you know, dealing with international payments. And that's where guys like you step in. But that's the first thing I would totally underline the importance of exploring that. The second thing is as you said, it doesn't necessarily have to be made in Britain, because a lot of us make stuff in China or have it made for us, rather. But you can always do something that I've seen in many, many different things outside of the Amazon space, which says designed in, like my Apple, my iPhone. I don't know if I can get it close enough to the camera, but it says basically designed in California. And that's a brand thing in itself, right? California is a bit cooler than just the USA, and made in China. So there's always that option. So I just wanted to flag that up for the questions I can hear coming in the listener's mind.
Yeah, I mean, another example is the cricket bat that I use when I play with my kids is a Slazenger cricket bat, which has, again, a Union Jack down the side of it, which says designed in the UK. I'm sure it's manufactured in China today, but there's something about a British-designed cricket bat, which at least the test cricketers are doing a pretty good job right now. So there maybe is some more respect with it being designed in the UK than the fact that it's without any identity, any national identity at all.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Not having any identity makes it so very bland, or made in China is just kind of the same almost as generic, given that 80% of the world's manufacturing happens in China. It's a kind of non-brand, isn't it? I mean, it's certainly not a powerful one. So that's a very good point. Like a lack of brand is almost worse than anything.
Yeah, I mean, we see it even in the flip side, and I find this quite amazing, is that we launched, I think it was towards the end of last year, our CNY payment service, Chinese currency account, so that if you're an Amazon seller, Amazon China has now opened itself up to cross-border sellers. It's still very early on. There are not that many sellers in the UK or the US that have already managed to penetrate Amazon China, but they are definitely opening it up. And this is certainly an opportunity if you're just at the beginnings of expanding into the US, or you're in the US and you've just started expanded into UK, keep an eye on China, because it's a huge opportunity and it will grow. And there are more suppliers. I mean, we're helping on the currency side so that there's no gap there, but there are plenty of other companies out there that are helping to bridge the gap. But in China, what's quite remarkable is you think, well, we're all going out there buying stuff that's made in China. There are Chinese consumers, Chinese middle classes out there that are really interested in American brands, in UK brands, and European brands. So just as much as, you know, we're buying Chinese stuff, there are Chinese consumers out there that are really interested in brand Britain, stuff that's been manufactured in Britain or designed in Britain. And that's something that you can actually be successful with in the reverse.
It's a very, very interesting opportunity you're mentioning there. It's funny because it never gets talked about in Amazon circles, but I was speaking to a guy the other day whose partner is Chinese, and he is British, but actually I think he's American / British, but he speaks Chinese anyway, and he's about to go out there. And he was saying how much money people spend in China on British cereals, because they just don't trust the Chinese brands any more than we do. And they know very well what's going on in some cases. I mean, some of the Chinese brand manufacturing is superb, like my iPhone, right? It varies, but... yeah, so the point is they would buy a box of cereal that we'd pay £4 for, paid £8 or something in or equivalent in China, which given the average wage there is a colossal sum. So that was just brought home to me a very simple example of the power of a British brand in China.
Yeah, I mean, and there are opportunities all over the world for this. And you know, what we see is if you're the UK seller and you've started with bricks and mortar, you've expanded into Amazon.co.uk, and you're looking for your next challenge. So you've got two directions really as the first step to go in. One is to head across the ocean to the US, and the other side is to go a little closer to home to Europe. Both of them have their strengths and weaknesses. To the US, it seems like an easier jump to make because you don't have any language barrier. And I know in your podcast, you've done a few sessions on localizing for the European markets and about product descriptions and product names very recently, which are really important to do. And having mother tongue is something that really helps to be able to bridge that gap. At the same time, the Europe is really close, and it is very easy to make that jump. In fact, in the numbers we see, these are Amazon's numbers, actually, that for UK exporters, year over year, exports reached 1.8 billion pounds in 2016. That was up 29% year over year, but the increase in Europe was up 40% year over year. So it seems that between those two opportunities, there is a tendency to look a little closer to home, to the Western European markets to begin with, but there is still plenty of opportunity in the US. And it could be perhaps because there is a perception that the US market, Amazon.com, is pretty competitive, that there is a lot of products on there. It's hard to stand out amongst the rest. And whereas maybe in Europe, there are fewer SKUs that are out there, and you've got more of an opportunity to get in there. What we see is if you've got the right products and you package them up in the right way and brand them in the right way, you can be successful whichever direction you go in.
Excellent. Brownie points for using SKUs correctly. I mean, yes, so the products for people who haven't yet come across that particular three-letter abbreviation. But yeah, I'd agree with the the tendency towards Europe, but it's very interesting to hear those numbers, which I hadn't heard. I think one of the obvious points to make as well is that the pound is weak. Now, we often perceive that as a weakness, but if you're exporting, of course, it's a fantastic time. So if you do have British made products, and I've sell a couple in one of my businesses with a business partner, it's a fantastic time to export them because you can sell them for a lot more money in pounds. Well, once it translates back from euros, without doing any extra work, because the euro has risen against the pound. So I think that is a huge opportunity that quite a lot of people are just overlooking. In the sky is falling in panic of the pound losing value.
Yeah, and that's we definitely saw that. There was an increase, and in the pound has had a couple of significant drops. The first one, of course, was when the Brexit referendum results came through. That was the first drop, and there have been a couple more along the way. It definitely did create a little bit more cross-border selling coming out from the UK. These sorts of things are not necessarily long-term trends, but we do believe that there is a long-term trend of the world becoming a little more borderless, and it's actually a little counterintuitive, because if you tune into the television news, you're going to hear presidents and prime ministers that are actually talking really about putting up building walls and focusing in on what's at home, and you'll have America first, and you'll have even shopping at the supermarket in the UK online. There are some online supermarkets now have filters that you can select to buy British to support the local economy. So there are these trends that might be taking place, and certainly a lot of rhetoric. But at the same time, and this is really the force of the internet over the last 20, 25 years, the boundaries and borders that have been put up by countries and politicians are something that people and consumers and business owners are overcoming, and actually seeing that the entire world is an opportunity. Whether as a consumer you can feel equally comfortable now buying from sellers and from brands anywhere in the world, but also as a seller, now that global opportunity is there, and there's nothing really that any rhetoric from leaders is going to be able to stop that from happening. So whilst there might be a short-term impact of a little bit more cross-border selling as a result of the weak pound, we believe this is still a long-term trend for whenever the currency sort of flattens out and calms down, that will continue to grow pretty rapidly.
Yeah, and very interesting what you're saying about the rhetoric versus reality. I think one of the reasons, when I used to do sales job, one of my sales managers used to, they were a funny lot, the sales managers I worked with, but they did teach me some very good basics of commerce. And one was objections are buying signals. So in other words, there isn't going to be any kind of objection unless there's a reason, that there's a sort of engagement to start with. And one of the reasons that the politicians are in some cases talking about what seem quite insane responses, like putting up physical walls along a 2,000-mile barrier or something, is rather like the Berlin wall or the Iron Curtain. It's there because they sense that, like King Canute in the sea, to use a British metaphor, that they're standing there and the sea is coming in. There ain't nothing about that. You can put a flood barrier in place and it'll keep your feet dry for 10 minutes. And I do get a feeling that with, that Trump and another sort of the British regime at the moment, or well, it's not really a regime, bunch of people who are cobbling, governing together, should we say, whatever's going on up there. I kind of give up on them really, but whatever the politicians are doing, I think they are trying to embody what a portion of the populace is reacting against, which is the very borderlessness of modern commerce. And I think that tells me more than anything how widespread it is, that if the general populace has woken up to it, it means it's getting mainstream. Whereas we've obviously been involved in this stuff, like that it's still a tiny percentage of commerce, isn't it? Well, I don't know what the percentage is in the UK, but only about 8% of e-commerce, only about 8% of retail in the US is via the internet, which is crazy to me because, of course, I spend my life on the internet. So that means there's still a huge opportunity for growth, and there's still a massive social sea change to come, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we see it all over the world. I was in India a week and a half ago and did a lot of work there, meeting with Amazon sellers and merchants that are, some merchants went to a market, like a real market, walking down the street with stores, lots of fabrics and clothing, amazing experience. And our local team in India had set up a series of meetings for myself and the team that had come over, going into these stores and actually talking to these business owners about how they've now started selling on Amazon India, and now they're ready to make the next step and start to enter the world of cross-border. And what's really quite remarkable is, you see, you know, coming from the UK, where so much of e-commerce, at least amongst our peers, e-commerce is now an absolute given. There are still other countries and markets around the world that are 5, 10, 15, 20 years behind and catching up. And some of these markets, India is an example, with a population of, I think it's like 1.4 billion people, in Mary Meeker's Internet Trends report that she brought out a couple of months ago, India, I think, is one of the fastest growing in internet penetration. They might be 10, 15 years behind in terms of e-commerce penetration, but they are catching up, and they are catching up fast. And when they do catch up, we are talking there about a massive consumer population and also a massive exporter population. So we're going to start to see the world from all corners get even more kind of richer in terms of the choice of merchandise that is circulating around the world, that you're going to have more Indian suppliers with really unique Indian and you know, quite proudly, I'm sure, made in India merchandise that they will be putting out there on amazon.co.uk in front of UK consumers. And in reverse, the opportunity will start to open up for the UK consumer to be able to penetrate those middle classes, those online consumers within India, and yet another market opens up. So there is no stopping this trend. You know, there is going to be more and more buyers and sellers all over the world that are interested in doing business with each other. We talk a lot about Generation X, Generation Y. I'm not even sure if we're into Generation Z or Z yet, but talking about young people that have kind of grown up in the world of internet, that they don't really remember a time before the internet. They are a generation that wants choice, expects choice, wants low prices, and the fact that the entire world can basically enter this e-commerce community with Amazon as a leading light in connecting those buyers and sellers around the world is, in my view, an unstoppable force.
Yeah, I think I get very much the sense of that from my little sort of, even from my living room, literally, because that's what the internet does. But obviously you have that, the advantage of physically traveling around and meeting people in countries that I don't have any particular occasion to go to India at the moment. But just tell me a little bit about Brand Britain, talking of which, and for that matter, US or made in Germany. What are the sort of perceptions of those country brands, if you like, in India?
So it's interesting to see kind of what Americans associate with the Brits. Bear in mind that majority of Americans have never traveled outside of the US. So many of them, their perception of the UK and perception of Britain is formulated by what they consume in the media, what they consume on TV. So they definitely have an extremely strong inclination towards our culture. They love our history. They're really into our royals. They're Will and Kate are a probably bigger brand in the US than they are on the streets of Britain. They love our humor. Monty Python is still far bigger, I think, in the US than it is today in the UK. Some of us remember it. Others today probably are not so aware of it. Monty Python is still very strong. Music, Beatles, Adele, Coldplay, Elton John, Rolling Stones. Huge following in the US. And TV and movies, James Bond, Simon Cowell, James Corden, Downton Abbey, these are all shows and TV personalities that have made it very big in the US. So there's a strong kind of that special relationship that you know, prime ministers and presidents have spoken about in the past, I think actually exists on a very kind of cultural level between the people of Britain and the people of US. And that I'm describing it all in one direction here, but it's also very much the feelings mutual. There is plenty of obsession in the UK for US brands and US heroes and US television and movies. We certainly watch a lot more American made movies in the UK than we do British made movies. So there's a lot of love going on here between the US and UK. And I think that is really where there's the opportunity to play off that. And, you know, you don't have to go to like an extreme of bangers and mash and fish and chips and tea and crumpets and things like that and just go to like the stereotypes, but to kind of proudly present a brand as British, even if there isn't anything that is uniquely British about it, other than the fact that the owners of the business and the designers and the those that have conceptually come up with the brand are based in Britain, that can be an identity that gives you the edge, that makes your, again, at my examples before of toys and sports equipment or clothing brands or even electronic goods can give it a certain level of kudos, which will count for brownie points. And when somebody's looking for that unique product on Amazon, they're going to spot it and be drawn in towards it.
Excellent. And thank you for reminding us of that, you know, it's the two-way thing. And it's absolutely true. I mean, I guess it's so true that we forget it in a way. as sellers, to make a thing of it, we just assume it as opposed to spelling it out. Mm-hmm. One last question about that is the global perception of British brand. Since you were in India recently, what is the sort of perception of the British brand as a whole in India?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I was sitting in a cab at one point and the driver started a conversation with me. And I actually wondered there, like, you know, given England's not so glorious history over in India, what the whether there was no love lost at all. And what I actually felt was quite the opposite, that they were extremely hospitable. There is no hard feelings about what might have happened in the past there. And a lot of shared history and cultural interests. So there in India, we ended up talking a lot about cricket. I was served probably more tea in India than I was than I typically do when I visit a company in the UK. What I found there was that there was really kind of quite a lot of respect and interest in the UK market and in UK brands. In fact, one of our biggest customers is an Amazon seller in India that has an Indian brand of tea and selling that Indian tea all over the world. So they're selling it in the US, they're selling it in the UK and expanding to new markets as well, selling through Amazon as well as through other channels as well. A beautiful brand. They're a venture-backed company. So they really have gone from some kind of like a small family business up to something that's really a brand that is looking to take the world on. And that's the, sort of the strength of the private label in that they've created a name for themselves. They've got a Facebook page. They are doing marketing. They are going to get their merchandise in the hands of consumers. And then they are going to look to build a long-term relationship with that consumer, get them to fall in love with their brand, buy their brand, recommend their brand. And I think that's something that the more countries I go to, Japan, I was in also a little early on this year, talking again to Japanese Amazon sellers, as well as those that consumers that shop on Amazon Japan and are interested in merchandise from other countries, the more I'm getting convinced of the fact that you can pretty much call up any country that you like around the world, and I can make a case of why there is an interest in buying merchandise that is made or designed in these other countries. So I really think this is a very kind of strong relationship that exists between different consumers in different countries and different countries themselves. And I think this is very, very good news for Amazon sellers that are going global.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Johnny, for talking us through that whole area. I mean, it's unusual to get a sort of payment specialist who has such a broad view. But I really think because of your job that you are in that quite a unique position to talk us through that. So fascinating stuff. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA. I've got a quick one for you. If you're super stoked and awesomely excited to sell on Amazon, that's great. But if you're American, I'm afraid you need to stop listening because this one is for the Brits only. I'm not being biased, but this is because I'm talking about something which is based in London. So you're going to need to be in Britain or near Britain to take advantage of it. The basic problem we have as internet entrepreneurs is we are lonely and isolated because we're tapping, sadly, at our tablets on our own. We're cooped up with our computers and we're going insane with the internet. We need to connect to other people. It's only a human thing, right? And relationships are the basis of all good business. So if you are in that situation, keep listening because we have a solution called the Amazing FBA London Mastermind. But I'm going to specifically talk to you if you're in that situation, but you are yet to launch on Amazon. So you want to launch on Amazon, you haven't got there yet. This is exactly for you. It's called the Zero to Hero Pre-Launch Mastermind. And our aim is very simple to get you from research or importing, or even if you've got products on the way to Amazon, to launch with your first product live on Amazon. That's our goal. That's our focus. How do we achieve that? Very simple. We have a face-to-face meeting of up to 15 people, no more than that. So it's very, very focused. And you get 30 minutes minimum to talk about your business and focus on the single issue that's blocking you that month to move you forward. The other way we keep you accountable is that we have a video accountability call once a month as well, which it goes in between the physical meetups so that we keep that momentum going, because momentum's everything, guys. As you know, on your own, you just lose the dream and you fall into slowness, and then the business just dies from neglect. So we do the opposite. We keep it moving. We keep each other motivated. We inspire, and we tell the truth about what doesn't work so other people can learn from it. We also have a couple of other things. I give an exclusive newsletter available only to members of the Mastermind, where I share the latest tips, techniques, and tricks, and bigger strategies that I'm trying on my Amazon businesses, and tell you what works and frankly what doesn't work as well, so you can learn from my mistakes. And of course, there's an exclusive Facebook group to share all this good stuff with each other in between the meetings and the accountability calls. So there's a ton on offer here. It's obviously going to be very limited because it's maximum 15 people anyway, but for the first 5 people who come on board, there will be a special deal and a very special price for life. But that's obviously only for the first 5 people who come on board. So if you want to check it out, just go to amazingfba.com/London Mastermind, and you can find out there more about it. You can apply there as well if you want to. And if you move fast, you might even be one of the lucky first 5 people to take advantage of it as well. So that's amazingfba.com/London Mastermind. I'm going to put this video out to everyone on my podcast and everyone in the Facebook group, of which we've got nearly 900 members now, and on the YouTube channel. So I imagine that this will fill quite quickly. So if you're serious about it, get yourself over to amazingfba.com/London Mastermind, and you can find. Thanks for listening.